ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Got him or no? Thank you.
ESPN 1000. It's Hanley. It's Xander on a Sunday. Nice long holiday weekend. What are your plans tomorrow? Brian, Labor Day. You're not going to do any work, are you?
No, and your admonishment not to do any work. Put the projects off. Certainly some barbecuing, but
you're going to have somebody else do that because that would be working, right?
No, I enjoy that actually.
Okay,
I do enjoy that.
What are you good at throwing on the grill? What's your favorite?
I do pretty basic stuff, but pretty good. The steaks, chicken breasts, pork chops. Marinated, not marinated, seasoned, unseasoned, whatever you want. I can, nothing extravagant. I'm not like some of these guys with the rotisserie grills and the.
No rack of ribs?
No. See, ribs intimidate me. I don't know why that is. The parboiling and the whole.
You know what? There is an art and science, and I know this because I failed more than a few times.
Right.
Until I got there. So
they're labor intensive, and I always that's the one food, the one thing you could probably barbecue if you wanted to, that I think you probably get better ordering out or going to get to a real good barbecue place. That I could never come close to getting what I can get by just picking up the phone and having someone deliver it.
Right. It would be more of a convenience at this point because there's many, many people that know exactly what they're doing. Ben Pope knows what he's doing. He's working for the Sun-Times, writing about the Blackhawks, and Ben joins us here on ESPN 1000. Ben, what are you doing tomorrow? Oh, okay. We're going to get him soon here.
He's parboiling ribs right now, apparently.
Yeah, well, that's obvious. He's getting ready for tomorrow. But we're going to talk to him about the Blackhawks and what's going on there. I'm really intrigued about these moves. We'll never really know what happened with, these management moves, the office moves. The other day, we really won't know, and it'll be interesting to see if he has any insight that he hasn't shared already about what was really behind this, because we've got all that drama in the background, right?
Well, and look, the interesting thing was when the dominoes started falling this offseason, as much as I thought Duncan Keith's game had kind of, passed him by, no question his commitment and the way he approached his game and kept himself in shape. But at his age, he was more in a step slow, but you weren't spoiled for choice on the blue line anyway. So you needed an upgrade there. But no one really saw, given the fact they had a no movement trade, a no movement clause in his contract, that he was going anywhere, right? I mean, he talked about wanting to play hockey forever. Well, it's just not going to be with the Blackhawks. So when that domino fell and Andre Fleury became available and the trade was made, and yet initially he said, maybe I'll retire.
I don't want to play here.
Yeah. Right. Not sure what the Blackhawks are all about these days, but then he did some homework and apparently Jonathan Toews and some of the Hawks got on the phone and sold them on the fact that this is a good landing spot and good things can happen here. But he didn't want to uproot his family at his age, at his point in his career, after the success he had in Vegas.
Oh, he made enough money. He can have five houses in all different markets. And he knows there's no uprooting we would have to do.
Right. So then you go get Seth Jones and make the trade. You give him a ton of money. And, you got his brother first and then you get Seth Jones. So now, also the blue line looks a lot better. And you get Connor Murphy re-opted a very friendly, four-year, $4 million per contract. So everything started happening rather quickly here. You didn't see the moves coming necessarily at the beginning of the summer, and then they just kept coming, right? So I'm wondering if Hawks fans, how excited they are, 312-332-3776. Does it change your perspective going into the season? And the other aspect is, with all the reporting being done on the lawsuits and whether the Blackhawks covered up the allegations of sexual assault and handled it the wrong way and maybe illegally at that. I don't hear a lot here. There's certainly a lot being written about it, and certainly on social media people weighed in, but there's been a lot of reporting on it. But I don't hear Hawks fans talking about it, that it's even on their radar. It doesn't seemingly change the way they perceive the Blackhawks as a team they want to root for, Mark. And yeah. I know, you know, some people are like, well, how couldn't it, you know, wouldn't you, you know, don't you feel bad that you're, if the team is, in fact, did mishandle this to the point where it was a cognizant thing to do, like bury it, because they were on the cusp of winning the 2010 Stanley Cup championship, and they didn't want any of the distractions that would have come along with this had that become public at the time. But it doesn't seem like Blackhawk fans really have an interest in finding out, you know, who did what, when did they do it, when didn't they do it, and why didn't they do it. It seems like just get me my Vezina-winning goaltender, and Kevin Lankinen will be a nice backup, and hopefully Jonathan Toews is back and ready to go at the start, and Patrick Kane has dealt with whatever illness or injury he had that he sort of revealed at the end of the season without going into specifics. And, you know, get me to hockey season, I think that we'll be a much better team. And I wonder how Hawks fans really believe, if, you know, how much they believe they are going to be a much better team.
312-332-3776. You do bring up an interesting point. Now, I am surrounded in my family and otherwise by Blackhawk fans. And there are a few in my inner circle here that are just obviously horrified. I don't think that there's a question about the allegations and how horrific they are, but how do they affect your fandom right now? And what do you need to see from the Hawks to make you feel better about what apparently has transpired, even though it's 10, 11 years removed? So we would love to hear from you on that point too. 312-332-3776. At some point, we hope to get Ben Pope on to talk about a couple of the articles he wrote for the Sun-Times on the Blackhawks. But for me, Brian, I've just got to see them. You know, we made reference to the old boys club, Pulford days and all that. And I'm not, I mean, I think we could speculate that it would be handled differently then as it will now, hopefully. But I think with Danny Wirtz, I think they are going to be transparent. That's what they have promised with the investigation. They have promised transparency and to be upfront about things. And that's what I expect as a fan.
Well, you mentioned Rocky Wirtz and you know, the changes made since he took over once his dad passed away. And they were immediate and they were astounding and they were earth-moving when in terms of what, you know, the old Blackhawks organization looked like.
It was life-changing for fans.
And he became a rock star in this city, yes, right? I mean, yes, he soaked it all in, and rightfully so. He, you know, he took the victory lap, was out at restaurants and bars and with the Stanley Cup and people backslapping and wanting to take pictures and get autographs at the United Center. He'd walk around, sign all the things that come with winning. And I will say this, because back when I was covering the beat years ago, when I, it seemingly, and actually it was a fact, every few months I was at a press conference for a firing of a GM or a coach and a hiring of a new GM or coach. And sometimes both in the same year, I think I covered 8 coaches within about 7 or 8 years of the Blackhawks. But I remember Rocky Wirtz went to the podium for the first time. Now, this is back in the late 90s, I want to say. And maybe it was the Mike Smith firing, or one GM or firing, or head coach firing. And that was the first time I'd seen Rocky Wirtz. And Peter Wirtz was the son who had the office down the hallway from
Bill Wirtz. He seemed to be the heir apparent.
Exactly right. I mean, I sat in his office many times and talked about, you know, big picture plans and how much input he has, you know, because Bill Wirtz was getting older. And, you know, that if you asked me which Wirtz son was going to take over, it, you know, the guy at the office at the United Center in the hockey department was going to be the guy. But it moved very swiftly when Rocky Wirtz took the role and the reins. And I remember Rocky Wirtz stood up at a podium before he even had a title with the Blackhawks, other than being, you know, part of the ownership, and said the fish stinks from the head down and that's going to change. And I wrote a column in the Sun-Times at that time off that press conference saying those are very refreshing words that I never heard articulated at the United Center. Now he just has to back it up. And, you know, he wrote me a letter back in the old snail mail, you know, saying I fully intend to back it up and I mean every word of it and just, you know, wait and see. But even at that time, it would be a few years removed or many years removed until, obviously, you know, as long as Bill Wirtz was alive and well, no one was going to suggest that he step aside and let Rocky or Peter or the younger blood take over, because that just wasn't done in the Wirtz family. But once Rocky did take over, I mean, he had a plan, and he had
he executed really well.
You know, and with John McDonough and Jay Blunk's help, right? I mean, I love that story that they went to a Champions sports bar out in Oak Brook or Schaumburg, maybe, right? Mm-hmm. And that Rocky Wirtz, John McDonough thought he was just going to go out there because Rocky Wirtz wanted to pick his brain about how you change marketing or, you know, change the perception of a dormant sports organization. And Rocky Wirtz said, no, I went in there fully intending to hire John McDonough away from the Cubs, and I wasn't taking no for an answer. And then
that's what we needed at that time.
Yeah. Absolutely. John McDonough makes the move, and, you know, they pay him big money to make the move. And it was a very demanding president, you know, people within the offices. His mantra was bring me greatness. And he would repeat that in almost every meeting he had. And he had hockey operations and the business operations people in the same meetings. So they all got the same message and knew what the others were doing and what the expectations of both were. So it was very interesting, the management style, but it was also a very tiring management style that, you know, the rank and file, you know, there was much demanded of them. And mm-hmm. I don't know if that burned out some people, but certainly the results were three Stanley Cup championships and a whole different vision for fans in this city of how the Blackhawks operate and the expectations and where the bar is set moving forward.
Right, and that bar is still high, and we still have a lot of expectations. Dale from Woodridge is calling in here on ESPN 1000, wants to talk Blackhawks. Yeah. Hey, Dale.
Brian, I do have to disagree with you. I was one of the people sitting in 2005, 6, 7, and looking and saying, wow, there's not many people here, but saw that they were going to be good. Because we knew that Dale Talon had drafted good. Mm-hmm. And anybody could have done. We sat a bar one time and said, you know, what would you do if you took over the Hawks? Right away, we were like, we'd put them on TV. And yeah. This was 2006. So, I don't think McDonough did anything that Black fan would have said, and in fact I was a Ranger fan when I was a kid, not because I liked the Rangers, but because when my dad and my family would go out for pizza, the Rangers were on TV.
Right.
So when I got older, we're like, hey, you know, anybody could have put them on TV. But my point is, McDonough was the guy who ran that organization, like you said. And he was the guy who covered up this sexual assault thing. He said, we're not letting that happen. We're in the middle of a Stanley Cup run. And he was the one who basically shoved it under the rug.
Well, it certainly happened on his watch, and thanks for the call. And,
yeah, thanks, know, Dale. Look, putting the Blackhawks on TV was a no-brainer. I was a season ticket holder in the late 80s at the old stadium, and I knew that that was the answer, too. And we all knew that Bill Wirtz, as he was always affectionately known as Dollar Bill Wirtz, was just hanging on to the idea of forcing people to get them to the stadium.
Right.
By blacking it out. And that was just a very misguided and antiquated approach. But he was an old schooler.
To your point, I remember watching kids, little kids, if they showed up at the United Center wearing Mighty Ducks, Anaheim Ducks jerseys.
Absolutely.
Right?
I remember that too.
And it's right. So the idea, the old school idea that you have to buy a ticket to see the Blackhawks. We're not giving it away free on TV, which is, by the way, not free. I mean, they couldn't command a lot of money back in the day for rights.
Right, but there are ad dollars that you would recoup.
Right. I mean, they weren't, you know, it's not like, you know, the Bears can command X number of dollars or the Cubs or White Sox when they're winning. You know, everyone's fighting to get be their broadcast partner. But I remember having a conversation with Bob Pulford one time saying, once they were on TV, I said, hey, why do you still start games at 7:30? Because if you start it even a half hour earlier, first of all, younger, you know, kids can go because you're getting to bed at a decent hour instead of getting home at 10:30 or 11:30, maybe you get home at 10:30 and they have school the next day. People have to work the next day. And I said, this is the real reason, the 10 o'clock news, we'll have a live shot from your locker room or outside your locker room after every game at home,
no
because
doubt.
Your game's wrapping up right when their newscast is starting, right?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
just simple things like that, that you want to market a team and get as much coverage and exposure as possible. Yet Bill Wirtz used to, back in the day, people did dress up in a suit and tie or come from work where they had worn a suit and tie, and women were dressed to the nines.
And the top hat.
Yeah, they would go out to dinner and have a nice dinner, and they would make their way to the old Chicago Stadium. And that was the routine. And so Bill Wirtz would think that people still did that instead of, oh, by the way, now there's two income houses and people, you know, families can barely sit down and have dinner together because of all the different schedules.
A lot of difference between 1963 and 1983.
Amen.
And we're going to continue on this, and we're going to get to more Bears talk, and we're going to get to back to baseball too here.
Hey, I have a list for you.
Yeah. Oh, you have a list. I love lists.
The Ringer ranks all 45 Bears quarterbacks from 1985 on. Worst to first.
Oh, I can't wait for this. That is coming up and more here on ESPN 1000. It's Hanley and Zander. We'll be right back.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Facebook at ESPN Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Welcome back into ESPN 1000. With Hanley and Zander, we invite you to join the conversation, 312-332-3776. Talking about the Blackhawks right now, a couple days ago, it was announced that Jay Blunk and James Gary depart. New management shifts focus. We know Danny Wirtz took over the team from Rocky in December of 2020. They're going to have a lot of focus on attracting younger fans, Brian. And then, obviously, we have the backdrop of the scandal in the background while there is an investigation going on right now. And then all the off-season moves on the ice. We have Dave from Elmwood Park joining us here this morning on ESPN. You're with Hanley and Zander. Hey, Dave.
Good morning. I've been listening intently to your talk about the Blackhawks scandal, and it doesn't bother me one iota in terms of my enjoyment as a fan, because unfortunately, just because somebody files a lawsuit doesn't mean it's gospel truth. And people in these contexts always say it's about change and dignity, but it's really about money. And I think that if we give it credence or even cover it, you know, we might be actually aiding and abetting a shakedown of the Wirtz family. And so I just tune it out completely.
Interesting take.
That is. I mean, the media has to cover that. It's a story. That's what the media does. But it's up to the end user to use it as they will.
Is bad, Dave, as the allegations are against a player on the roster from the video coach at the time allegedly taking advantage. And everyone, you know, the reporting is that everyone on the team was well aware of what the player was saying took place to the point where he was being insulted chided about it. Mm-hmm. The further one, I don't know, would you feel the same way if you were the father of the high school player that this guy went on to coach in Michigan and he was convicted of sexual assault there? If, in fact, as alleged, the Blackhawks gave Bradley Aldrich a glowing report and recommendation to be hired as a volunteer coach, would you have that? Is it a shakedown then if you had to deal with a son who had been a victim of that?
To the father of the son, no, but one of the plaintiff's lawyers tried to get the Blackhawks to waive one of their statute of limitations defenses under some, you know, it's just the right thing to do. But that lawyer's not going to waive her fee. So you see, a lot of this is tainted. And I think the media is literally aiding and abetting, you know, a plaintiff's complex by just going on and on and on. Unrelated, I saw Michigan State Northwestern, and I had never heard Beth Mowins before. Her voice is so shrill and unpleasant. I literally watched the video, but I turned on Dave Emmett and Ted Albrecht because I'm not anti-woman, but her voice is like fingernails on a chalkboard. I don't know how she got into broadcasting. I don't know why.
All right, Dave. All right, Dave. Well, thanks for the call, Dave.
Yeah, and Dave is world class, and Ted, they've been doing it forever. So, I mean, it's a great broadcast team. Interesting take, though, that it's a shakedown. And here's the thing, Mark: we don't know what we don't know. But if you believe,
and there's a lot we don't know.
Well, I want to believe that the Blackhawks hiring, I think it was Jenner and Block, one of the big law firms in town, to do what they termed an independent investigation as to how they handled this situation. Hopefully it is, in fact, independent, even though they are paying for the investigation and spending a lot of money, I would imagine. Hopefully, will they keep that report in-house? Will they reveal the results of it?
Well, remember, they did make a statement saying that they will be transparent. Right. What does that really mean? How deep does that transparency go? That will be the question. And look, we can get it. We can go down the rabbit hole of this whole thing about, well, lawyers are involved and lawyers charge money. We don't need to go there. Look, there are some horrible allegations going on, and we need to know if there was a cover up, because that is going to unfortunately taint what happened in 2010. It just will.
Yeah. And again,
to a certain degree. Right. Yeah, and that's up to the end user.
Well, and again, I don't know how many Blackhawks fans share Dave's perspective on it, but it is his perspective. I'm glad he weighed in. 312-332-3776. But you said season ticket holder in the 80s. I'm sure you're still a heart and soul passionate Hawks fan, whether you have season tickets or not. Were you surprised that the seemingly change of direction and aggressiveness of this offseason with Stan Bowman and the team?
I definitely was. I applaud Stan and the moves that he made. We'll see if they're the right moves, both short term and long term. But it was a bit of a surprise. And you wonder in the background, they said it was part of a rebuild, right? And then all of a sudden we just hit another gear. It's as if he was shifting from first to fourth.
Yeah.
He didn't hit second and third. So you've got to wonder, and again, does all of this background noise contribute to this? But does Stan all of a sudden feel like he's got to make an immediate impact right now for his future?
Interesting. For a guy who's
sped up.
Yeah. The guy who's been at the helm of championships. We sit here and talk about Ryan Pace getting a seventh season with a losing record, and Matt Nagy, seemingly not on the clock either. And to think that Stan Bowman, who, got the title of president, right? So I don't know if that meant more money or even a bigger office, but in the initial restructuring of the front office, Stan seemed to get elevated in terms of his sway of the direction of the organization. And I don't know if a lot of Hawks fans think that's a good thing or they think that's necessarily an improvement over status quo. But he did make moves, surprising moves, and I know some people don't think Seth Jones was worth the collateral that you sent to Columbus or certainly the money you're paying him. But he got Connor Murphy on the other end of the spectrum to a very team-friendly deal. So it looks like you've improved one of the glaring areas where you need improvement, and that's on the defense anyway.
Yeah. Look, I was not upset about Duncan Keith as much as I thought I would be, because I thought it was a bit of a – it was a friendly move, right? Duncan said he hadn't seen his son. With the border being closed, his son was up near Vancouver, I guess, and during the COVID lockdown. These are family issues that anybody with a family could understand. Duncan's winding down his career. I'm sure he wanted to retire here, but family necessities kind of called him to this point of saying, hey, I would like to be traded. I'll waive my trade clause. So we thank him for his service, and I think it's great that he will have that ability to be closer to his son. But in the end, you're right. The defense had to be improved, and maybe we held on to some players too long. But of course, it was Bowman that put some solid no trade deals together.
Yeah, everyone got one.
And that was an issue. However, when it worked, it really worked. And sometimes you have to. You have to put yourself in a position for the short term to win, and then long term, you just deal with that other stuff later, and that's what really happened. And there have been times where we've talked to callers and people just want to give all the credit to Dale Tallon for drafting some of these kids. And yes, a lot of credit does go to him, but it was under Stan Bowman's watch that we won those three cups, and there wasn't just about those youngsters. It was about other moves made. and the guidance of him. So, you know, he is a Stanley Cup winning GM, now president, and he is trying to make some moves to improve this team. We just didn't know that we were, you know, getting here so quick.
Okay, when we come back, I'm going to take you kicking and screaming down memory lane.
Okay.
And go through some of the great quarterbacks the Bears have employed since the Super Bowl team in 1985.
What was that number? I know we've compared to Green Bay, and it was the number was 40-something?
Yeah, Brad Biggs used to – I think he still keeps the toll. From the Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers era, how many quarterback changes the Bears had compared to two Hall of Fame quarterbacks applying their trade up in Green Bay.
Yes.
And back in the day, it was the mid-30s. Well, this one, we're up to 45. The Ringer, the Ringer rated 45 different quarterbacks, worst to first, in the great history of Chicago Bears quarterbacks. So we'll do that when we come back. That.
Yeah, we will. It's Hanley and Zander here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Instagram at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000, Hanley and Zander. I can't wait for this list, Brian. How many quarterbacks have we had on the Chicago Bears since? Oh, what was the start of this list? What year?
Well, it's Super Bowl year. The Bears.
Super Bowl, yo, 85, sure, okay.
Yeah.
So we've had 167 quarterbacks?
Yeah, 45 have taken snaps.
45.
Which, you know, 45, most teams wouldn't go, you know, that deep, but, you know, the Bears being the Bears.
Deep, all right.
There's no suspense here, right? I mean, the debate would be Jim McMahon, who was the quarterback of the Super Bowl team. Was he the best of all time, even though it was all about, you know, the defense for the most part and Ditka and the offensive line and all that? Or was it Jay Cutler? Because remember, it was Beatlemania when Jerry Angelo traded for him. You know, he wanted.
I remember that. I was thrilled, and I looked at that reference. Day and wonder what happened.
Right. Dated rock reference. Everyone said it was Beatlemania in Chicago because everyone was like going out of their minds that the Bears finally got a legitimate NFL quarterback to take us to the promised land. Didn't exactly.
So we thought.
Yeah. So, you know, the debate is whether, you know, McMahon actually winning a championship or Jay being here and being paid like he was going to win a championship here, you know, made a lot of money. And I know, you know, he's a friend of the show, of the station, and now doing podcasts and such. But, Roger Sherman of The Ringer put together this list, and he's a real good follow on Twitter, too, Roger, R-O-D-G-E-R. But he came up with a formula. Basically, the whole idea of this list in this story is that Justin Fields doesn't have a very high bar to hurdle to be the best Bears quarterback of all time, right?
Right, right. And I think we all knew that going in.
Bears are 281 and 278. Since 1986, 17th in wins out of the league's 32 teams, you know, almost perfectly mediocre, as he says. The Bears rank among the middle of the pack in wins since 86. They're also 30th in passer rating. Haven't produced a first team all-pro quarterback since Johnny Lujack, who, you know, not Larry's brother, in 1950. And he threw four touchdowns and 21 interceptions. So, you know, look, Trubisky did get to a Pro Bowl because four other quarterbacks said thanks, but no thanks. And they finally got to the fifth choice, and it was our guy Mitch. But so he put together this point system. Quarterbacks received between 1 and 45 points for their ranking in two categories, passing touchdowns with the Bears and career approximate value according to Pro Football Reference. For example, Cutler passed for the most touchdowns of any Bears QB since 86. So he got 45 points in that category. The first stat reflects how well these QBs performed for the Bears. The second helps put their contributions in Chicago's into context because a lot of them went on to play for other teams. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he comes up with a point system, including players who are awarded 10,000 bonus points for being named All-Pro at any point in their NFL careers or for leading the league in any major statistical category as a member of the Bears Unfortunately, none of the 45 players on the list claimed this bonus, so no one got the 10,000. Here is Mr.
Bears.
The last guy drafted is Mr. Irrelevant, right? Usually in the NFL draft, and there's some town out west and that flies them in and has a parade and takes them to the diner and buys them dinner. You know, it's really quite something to be the last guy selected in the draft. The last guy on this list, yep. Mark Hartzell. Mark Hartzell. Do you remember Mark Hartzell?
Barely, but yes.
Came into a Bears-Packer game in 2000, is one of just seven NFL quarterbacks since the 1970 merger with the AFL to throw exactly one career pass, and yes, it was incomplete. He is deemed the worst all-time Bears quarterback since 1985. Tyler Bray is 44, and he kept his job because of running the practice squad, apparently, but he was actually 1 of 5 for 18 yards against the Vikings. Even though he'd been around for a while, he didn't look like he knew what he was doing when he was going out there. Sean Payton was once a Bears quarterback. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
He was one of the scabs, right? During the strike, he 1987, he came in and went 8 for 23, no touchdowns and interception, and went on to be a great offensive guru in New Orleans and winning championships. And you know,
yeah,
apparently
he grew up in Naperville, didn't he?
Yeah, didn't he go to Eastern Illinois too, right?
Yep.
So yep. Ryan Pace, unfortunately. this list is populated with the names you'll remember. David Fales should have been spelled F-A-I-L, but it was F-A-L-E-S. and we're only up to 40. I remember Henry Burris.
Yes, Todd, I remember Henry.
Todd Collins would make you want a Tom Collins when you watched him. It's not so not good. Jonathan Quinn. 36 was lost all three of his starts, but was named
the not so mighty Quinn.
Yeah, was MVP of the 2000 World Bowl after leading the Berlin Thunder to a come from behind victory against the Barcelona Dragons. So went on to great things across the pond. I remember, and Jimmy Clausen, I covered him in Notre Dame, and you know, according to Roger here, Mel Kiper once promised he'd retire if Clausen didn't become a successful NFL quarterback. And Kuiper has yet to follow through on that promise, even though Clausen finished his career with twice as many interceptions as touchdowns. Henry Burris, I was down covering the Bears when they had the season down in Champaign at Memorial Stadium while the rehab was going on at Soldier Field.
Sure.
I remember he actually took a snap and went two steps back and just tripped over his own feet. No one was within 10 yards of him. Henry Burris comes in.
That's bad news Bears right there.
Yeah, comes in at number 34 on the list.
So you know, I've got a couple of requests. I'm going to throw a couple names out there. You can tell me where they're at in the list. Eric Kramer, who we got from the Lions. Where is he on the list?
He is up there.
He's got to be in the top 20 at least, if not
I would say
10.
Top 10, right?
Yeah.
Let's take a look because, everyone knows Jim Miller comes in at number 12.
Jim Miller, there's another one. I was going to bring up Jim, too. Yeah, came from the Falcons, I believe.
Now a houseman for the broadcast team, a little too much, bear love when Jim's calling a game, but he knows how to keep employed. Let's see. Brian Griese is 11. Rex Grossman, he of the small hands, 10.
Yes.
Kyle.
Well, he got us to a Super Bowl. Well, not only him, everybody else, but they ended up there.
Well, everyone, the debate back then was Kyle Orton came in, right. And he was good. He was better than Rex Grossman. A lot of people are like, why isn't he in more Kyle Orton, please? He was 9. Mike Tomczak, 7. Still getting so Kramer, here's your guy. Number 5.
Number 5.
31 of 32 NFL teams have had a quarterback throw 30 touchdown passes in a given season. Then there are the Bears, whose single season passing touchdown record is 29. Normally, when a quarterback holds a franchise record for 20-plus years, the mark is set by a legend, someone like Marino, who still holds the Dolphins touchdown record. But with the Bears, the record belongs to your guy, Eric Kramer, an undrafted journeyman who played only 2 full seasons as an NFL starter. How about that? So, but he's still 5th on the list. And Dave Craig is 6th. So that tells you the drop.
Wow, really?
Between 5 and 6.
Yeah, that's a steep cliff right there.
Chris Chandler is 8. Can you barely remember Chris Chandler?
No, I do, but barely.
He played in 2003 while waiting for Grossman to develop. That led to one of the most watched washed up quarterback battles ever. Chicago going 7-9. Chris Chandler is eighth on this list, which is pretty much all you need to know about the Bears' history of quarterbacks.
312-332-3776. We'll get back into baseball. But, you know, after this break, if you want to jump in and give us a name of a quarterback that you barely remember, we'll find him on this list because I think this is fascinating. We've already heard some names that we barely remember. We'd love to get your input, 312-332-3776. And again, we'll get back to baseball, 12:30 start time for the pregame show with Connor McKnight, leading into Sox and Kansas City Royals, an afternoon game from Kauffman Stadium. It's Dylan Cease taking the hill for the Chicago White Sox on your home for the Chicago White Sox, ESPN 1000. It's Hanley and Zander. We'll be back in a bit.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
It's Hanley and Zander on ESPN 1000 having fun with this Bears quarterback list. Ranked worst to first. And we want to know if you want to jump in and give us an obscure name from the past. We'll tell you where they rank on this list. 312-332-3776. Earl from Cicero joins us on ESPN 1000. Hey, Earl.
Hey, morning, guys.
I remember back
in the Awani days, where was a guy. I remember someone even dressed like him. They went to the Bears game when we played him. Moses Moreno. Moses will save us.
Yeah, it sounded like the Macarena,
right? I also hope that Jimmy Mack is first on that list, by the way.
You know what? Jay Cutler's first on the list, and Jimmy Mack is second. And that where would you weigh in on that? I mean, the guy who won the Super Bowl should be on top of the list. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely, 100%.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. I agree.
Moses Moreno,
where is he on the list?
I believe he is 38, if I remember right. Mike Hohensee at 30. Oh, boy. Help me.
All these names. Oh, my gosh.
Caleb Haney. Craig Krenzel.
Caleb Haney, yes.
Moses Moreno is 38.
You nailed that.
He cracked the top 40 on this list because he actually threw a touchdown for the Bears. He now works as a referee. I did not know that. Moses doesn't say, is he not an NFL referee? Is he a high school referee? Maybe he isn't there. I haven't seen him doing the Ed Hockey League, turning on the microphone and telling me who the holding was on.
No, he's laying low. 312-332-3776 if you've got a name you want to throw out there. Who was the guy that played for the Steelers before Big Ben, and we had him for a while? Cordell Stewart.
Stewart.
Can we have him?
Cordell Stewart, exactly right.
And where is he on that list?
I'll have to find him for you. Interesting because the caller said it has to be Jimmy Mack, and we can have that debate too because either you value the Super Bowl and saying,
How could McMahon, you not, though?
McMahon wasn't the biggest part of that team, but he was on that team, and he led the offense no matter, right?
Without a doubt, he's number one. Without a doubt. Because all things have to be considered. All right, we go to Bo from Roscoe Village. Bo, what's your quarterback name for us?
I think it's right before McMahon. Was it Vince Evans?
Vince Evans certainly would be – among, I would think, the top 15. So let me get
now,
there.
Now, is he on the list because this starts at the Super Bowl? The Super Bowl year?
That's true. You're right. He's not on the list. And your guy, Cordell Stewart, is 14. So that
14, okay.
Yeah, because
well, I'll tell you, when we got him, I had real high hopes because I loved him with the Steelers.
He was the slash
the
guy,
end of his
right?
Career.
As Roger points out, I mean, he was going to – he was with his athleticism. He was going to, most of the magic – it evaporated by 2003 when the Bears brought him in for one sad season in which he competed against Chris Chandler, the aforementioned. Stewart started 7 games, going 2-for-5 in passing. Now think about that. 2-5 on 7 games. That's his record. Think about that. Cordell Stewart, think, okay, at least it's not a statue back there. The guy's going to run around, create some things, bring some excitement. And they went 2-5 in the 7 games, and he battled Chris Chandler. That was the battle of the washed up quarterbacks at that point. And you go to Jay Cutler, right? So he is number one on this list. And again, you can debate between he and McMahon, But the fact of the matter is the numbers were he was squarely an average quarterback, right? Even though he made a gazillion dollars here and kept getting new contracts that paid him very, very well as if he was an elite quarterback. Mm-hmm. But just to refresh memories, the Bears were exactly 51-51 in his 102 starts, including the playoffs. His career peak before they even got to the team, his lone Pro Bowl was with and 4,000-yard season came in his final year in Denver. But, you know, if you're average, you're the best of the Bears quarterbacks. That's how desolate the quarterback, you know, landscape has been for the Bears. He Cutler had 154 touchdown passes for the Bears, 23,443 yards. And, you know, meanwhile, they went 51-51. And he got paid like he was one of the elite quarterbacks in the league. And
we thought that if we treated him like it, he would rise to the occasion, and he really didn't. Let's see. We've got Al. Did we talk to Al from Porter's Park, or is Al next? Okay. Let's go to Al. Oh, what's your quarterback name for us from the past, Al?
Good morning, guys. I actually had two. I think a caller before me mentioned Vince Evans, but I didn't hear where you ranked him. But the other guy.
He was before the list, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? Then my other pick, these are guys that I started watching football, was Vince Evans.
You're going to say Bob Avellini, right?
Bob Avellini. Yeah, oh, boy. Yeah, okay. All right.
Bob had an interesting off-field life. Yeah.
Yeah. That's before they did the rankings. All right. Yeah, those are two quarterbacks when I first start watching the Bears. Those were the two guys that played. So.
Thanks, man.
All right. Cool, man.
Yeah, Bob Avellini. He enjoyed adult beverages. I remember that.
Number seven, Bob Avellini.
Mike Tomczak is number seven on the list anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Mike Bob Tomczak wore the seven on his jersey.
No, I gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Tom from River North. Tom, you got a quarterback from Bears past for us?
I got a couple good ones. One guy I loved to watch was Bobby Douglas, number 10. Rushed for, that's, I think, 968 yards.
Yeah, yeah. This list, and I'm sure if it included him, he would be high on the list. Right. This list starts with the Super Bowl year, and Bobby Douglas
was my bad.
He had so much velocity on his passes, he would kill his receivers, right?
Yeah, when you think of the best legs, if Justin Fields doesn't have him, Bobby Douglas probably will still be the quarterback with the most rushing yards, I would think. That's almost 1,000 yards for quarterback. And so you know who was a really great player for the Bears that kind of went on the radar screen was Steve Fuller.
Steve Fuller.
Yeah, where's Fuller on that? He backed up McMahon.
Yeah. Let's see if he had to make the list. There he is, 19.
He was a pretty good super sub, right? Like he helped him out when McMahon went down over and over.
He started five games in the 85 Super Bowl season, rushed for five touchdowns. Always be remembered, according to Roger, who wrote the article, as the greatest, worst, and only rap verse in the history of second-string quarterbacks for the Super Bowl. Shuffle back up, Pete.
So. Yeah. And the other guy was Doug Flutie, Danby, I guess.
Doug Flutie. Yeah. That's, remember, Ditka brought him in against, and no one wanted him here. And Ditka was going to show everyone that he had the right guy, and he was going to be stubborn, Ditka. And that's,
he came from the CFL, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the Hail Mary game for Boston College. Who can forget?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Doug Flutie. We'll get to him in a second here. He's got to be. I don't know, top 25, right? Just by name.
Yeah, I would think so. So fill in the before we go to break. Fill in the rest of the top 10. We know that we know one and two is Cutler at one, McMahon at two.
Yeah,
who was that? Three?
Doug Flutie, by the way, 18 on the list.
18, okay.
That one of the greatest comeback stories in NFL history, but he only had to come back because his stint in Chicago didn't work out. So you have to bottom out before you come back, right?
Right. Yeah.
So he came in midway through the 86 season, you know, and Ditka was going to have him in come hell or high water after McMahon got hurt. And he threw two interceptions, and the Bears lost by two touchdowns in a first-round playoff game against Washington, right? So Richard Dent said the choice of Star Flutie ruined the Bears' chances of repeating because we all thought the Bears were going to be a dynasty, right? And Richard Dent laid that right at the doorstep
of Doug Flutie. Well, on paper, we should have been, sure.
And Emory Moore had said about Flutie, everybody wants to squash him. Everybody wants to squash him. But, yeah, we'll go with the top 10 because starting at number 10, the top 10 Bears quarterbacks since 1985. Rex Grossman, we talked about Rex. Kyle Orton, the dynamic duo that actually had some success. Chris Chandler gets number 8 on the list just because. Mike Tomczak, who was always trying to take Harbaugh's job, right? Dave Craig, another
guy.
How many undersized quarterbacks?
Right?
Yeah, how many undersized quarterbacks do you need, right? Dave Craig, best quarterback to play for the Bears since 1986. He, according to this is the author's choice, he made the most Pro Bowls of anybody on the list. Only player threw for 30 touchdowns in a season. He led the league in touchdown percentage 3 times and completion percentage once. Of course, all those accomplishments came with Seattle. Eric Kramer, number 5. Eric Kramer, as we talked about. Mitch Trubisky. Ryan Pace will be heartened over this. Number 4 of all great Bears quarterbacks. Ryan Pace said, I told you so. And number 3, Jim Harbaugh. And then number 2, Jimmy Mack. And number 1, Jay Cutler. To quote Jay, whatever.
Interesting. Very interesting list.